Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
Yep, me too. Kate, I'm Kate. That's me.
I'm afraid to say welcome to Med Crimes.
You should be.
But welcome to Med Crimes. I wanted to stay upstairs with the kids.
Okay. You can go upstairs if you want. I'll just talk into the microphone.
It'll
It'll be me and our subscribers.
As I'm driving here, I'm like, okay. She said this one was going to be bad.
It's pretty bad.
Ugh.
It's pretty bad.
I'm not prepared.
Part two of Shiro Ishii and Unit 731. Y'all.
Yeah.
I know y'all have been on pins and needles. First, we have a new Patreon. Melissa Fees.
Melissa!
Melissa! We love you.
Thank you for joining us.
We love you so much we sang your name. And I know what you are. I'm reading a different series now. I'm reading the Plated Prisoner series. And you are a Fireclaw. And a Fireclaw is a giant cat creature that lives in the fucking tundra. And they're fierce and fiery. And they literally have feet that are like on fire. Their feet, their claws. Are like on fire. Melissa Feast, you are a Fireclaw.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We love you.
Since this thing, like, we're part of the internet, essentially.
We are the internet.
And this thing broke the internet this past week.
Is it the...
Do we have a kiss cam here? I mean...
I knew exactly what you were talking about when you said this thing broke the internet this past week. The memes that have come out of that have been so chef kiss.
I just saw one of the two of them on a water ride at Water Country, and it was a new ad for Water Country.
Water Country. Oh my God, that's hysterical.
We are recording this episode tonight with plenty of time to spare for Tuesday, unlike 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You know, we said before everybody was okay, but let me tell you, 2 weeks later, things are fine. Things are great.
Yeah, everything's
meant to be. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was a hiccup.
I also then that same week started the week. And ended with the week with two different circumstances where I'm going, don't let the bastards grind you down.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was about.
Some planetary thing was like very misaligned for you for just a minute.
With two gentlemen that week. And yeah. It was just like, who is trying to do this?
Yeah. It was.
You cannot break me.
No, I'm telling you.
No, God, no.
God, no.
Like, real? I'm like...
No, these were just, like, you know, things that happened as, like, part of life.
You can break me, but you can't... You can try, but you won't win.
No, you will not win, because guess what, bitches?
Look at me.
Here we are. She's kind of glowing.
Cheers to this week not being... Knock on wood.
This week is going to be so much
better
for you.
Men who are probably uncomfortable with the size of their genitalia.
That's definitely
And that is exactly why...
That is all of what that was.
That is all of what that was that week.
Only possible explanation.
Yeah,
actually.
That's the only one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry if we offended any of you gentlemen out there.
But we have to get through this episode first
before
we can fly.
So you might want to
go like
get...
I feel like I'm going to crawl in a hole a few times.
You might crawl in a hole.
So what trigger warnings do we have? Because
so many.
You said there were...
So many. There are lots of them. And we'll go through them. I'm first going to just start this with just like a little bit of a summary of the first part. Just... You know, to bring everybody back to where we left off. So it's World War II times, or just pre-World War II, during the Second Shiro-Japanese War. And the Japanese committed these insane war crimes pretty much like all over the East, but mostly against China, sort of all through this period of time. And now Shiro Ishii is a Japanese doctor, and he has been sort of climbing the ranks within the Imperial Japanese Army. And the IJA in general did not even really regard Chinese citizens as like human beings, right? They were like these expendable resources, and they treated them accordingly. That's exactly how they were treated. And the Japanese were expanding their territories into China and had established all these strongholds throughout all of these cities that they had invaded. And Shiro Ishii's main objective within the IJA was to research biochemical warfare and how to weaponize things like bacteria and viruses and pathogens. And they felt that they needed human test subjects for this, which led to the development of Unit 731 within the IJA. And that was in which essentially Chinese and other citizens were kept as prisoners of war and experimented upon against their will. So we talked about them exposing prisoners of war to pathogens and then dissecting them alive.
That was the part that was like...
just to see what happened to their organs. Yep. Okay. And of course, never giving any anesthesia or sedation. And Shiro Ishii was like the mastermind of all of this. He was spearheading this whole project. So now we're going to start talking more about what else these prisoners endured. And the following does get graphic. Trigger warnings include sexual assault, physical abuse, and human experimentation, which happened to men, women, and children. So, in addition to the vivisections, Unit 731 also wanted to study more traditional wartime methods, like the melee and like combat weapons. So things like bayonets, swords, knives, and they would just like use these on the prisoners.
Just like literally
stabbing people, cutting them again, you know, without anesthesia or any sort of, you know, pain medication, and then seeing what the weapons did to their organs, seeing what kind of damage was caused.
I can't believe that.
It was all very, very much for quote unquote scientific purposes, just to see what kind of damage this would inflict if I did it this way or this way. Or
wow.
Yep. And then, of course, having the doctors Insanity. Treat them so that they could, you know, sew them back
up. Sew them back up and try them again for the next thing.
Until they were too weak or died or...
my gosh.
And then they were disposed of. They also studied flamethrowers on both covered and uncovered skin.
What?
To see what are the stages and severities of burns. How long do we need to put this on exposed
Those
skin
poor
to get
people.
It? This is just
they standing up against a wall and like here's your
just
fire.
A flamethrower. Yeah. Just casually. Yep. They also had set up gas chambers to test subjects with blister agents, nerve gas, mustard gas. They studied prolonged X-ray exposure, like radiation exposure.
Oh, goodness.
And that like sterilized and killed thousands of people, just radiation.
Oh, my gosh.
There were human subjects that were locked up and deprived of food and water, just to learn how long like humans could survive under certain conditions, under what temperature. And Army engineer Hisato Yoshimura conducted experiments by taking captives outside, dipping various appendages into water of varying temperatures, and allowing limbs to freeze.
Huh?
Freeze.
Like, let's just stick your arm into this
yes.
temperature.
Yes.
Well, you just stand here.
Yes.
And we hold it down.
Yes. Precisely.
Gosh.
Once frozen, Yoshimura would then strike their affected limbs with a short stick, emitting a sound resembling that which
a
board gives when it's hit. Like, it sounded like a wooden board.
I'm just picturing the pain of the nerves. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, man.
And once they froze the appendage, they would then chip the ice away and they would take the subject like for more experiments. Like, now what, like, is there something we could do to get the feeling and sensation back? Like, what if we warm it up? Does that help? Like, what if we hit it with a flamethrower? What if we hit it with this chemical? What if we give them this medicine? Would that work to regain function in that arm?
Oh,
no. Oh, shit. Throw that one away. Let's try it again.
Oh, my gosh. We're like 5 minutes in and I'm done.
It's bad. Although, let's get through this first part and then we're going to be done talking about like the specifics of all of that. They studied high velocity injuries and they did this in a variety of ways, including like binding prisoners and then dropping really heavy objects onto them. Mm-hmm. Just crushing people under immensely heavy
Lovely.
Things.
Great.
They also studied the effects of high G forces on pilots and falling paratroopers by loading human beings into large centrifuges. You heard me correctly. They constructed huge human-sized centrifuges and put human beings inside of them.
What?
And spun these human beings at higher and higher speeds until,
and temperatures
until they lost consciousness or died, which usually happened between 10 and 15 G's.
Oh my gosh.
What a fucking death. That I
You said which usually happened between what? 10 and
10 and 15 G's. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yep.
How do you even come up with that?
I don't know.
Let's just build a centrifuge to put this human in that's going to be like 6 feet tall.
Yes.
And make it spin.
Yeah. The amount of effort and money and resources that went into these very sophisticated and like the equipment to just, it boggles my mind. Prisoners were injected with seawater, exposed to tetrodotoxin, which is the pufferfish poison, ricin, drugs like heroin, again, various gases. The following is particularly triggering for sexual assault, pregnancy, childbearing. And this is actually really, really bad. Like I said this upstairs before we even started. Like, I'm not easily shocked by, there's not a lot that truly shocks me.
Yeah.
But, like, after reading this, like, I needed a minute. Like, I needed fucking minute. So, female prisoners of childbearing age were forcibly impregnated so that weapon and trauma experiments could be done on them to see what would happen to the fetus.
Oh.
Pregnant test subjects were infected with various diseases, exposed to chemical weapons, crash injuries, bullet wounds, shrapnel injuries, and then they were vivisected to see what happened to the women and to the baby and what...
Oh. 12-year-olds, some of them?
Yeah, anybody of childbearing age. Yeah. Yep. Another field of interest that was a rising concern was venereal diseases. And in general, these were being seen among their army as well as worldwide. We've talked about all of that, too. Mm-hmm. So pregnant women who were in the camp there were of special interest to researchers of Unit 731 and were studied extensively just to see like what happened to babies if mom was infected with this and that and the other thing. So there would be forcible sexual assaults upon women of childbearing age in order to purposefully infect them with syphilis. And they would use either staff members or infected prisoners that they had, that they would force them to rape women. And pregnant
the
women
fear.
With Yeah.
It had to have been going.
Jesus, I can't even wrap my head around it. Like, this is insane. And then if a sexual assault happened and between an infected man and a non-infected woman and it didn't end up infecting the woman, they would just keep making this person rape this person until this person became infected with syphilis. So
I literally have no words.
That's that. Ishii's men also supplied the Japanese army with the raw bacteria of typhoid, cholera, the plague, dysentery, anything and everything that was of the time that you can think of. And when Unit 731 thought they had enough data and supplies to do so, in addition, they contaminated water sources, released disease-carrying fleas, and began dropping contaminated wheat and seeds and other pathogens such as anthrax, typhoid, dysentery, and plague-infested fleas from airplanes over Chinese territories. They would just fly over the parts of China that they hadn't claimed yet as their own and just drop these crazy...
diseases.
And it would, they would get considerable outbreaks. Like, it worked.
Of course.
They would get... These whole cities became infested with, plague-carrying fleas. And that became a huge special interest to them, specifically fleas, carrying the plague. Um, And some prisoners had their limbs amputated and then surgically reattached to other parts of their body just to see what would happen. They would do seemingly very random things. Like they would like take a person and like cut their hands off at the wrist and then just like switch them around, sew them back on just to see, because why the fuck not?
What happens if you sew your hand upside down?
Yeah. Why the fuck not? So that's awful. Others would have their body parts crushed or deprived of blood circulation. Like,
I don't even know how you come up with these things.
How
does your brain have to be so malfunctioned to just be like, this is what I want to try today?
Yeah. I can't really, my head really doesn't go there. So like, I have a really hard time, I guess, being able to look at another human being, you know? Any man, woman, or child, or like pregnant woman, and be like, this is an expendable resource, and I'm just gonna use this person
to my leisure
because they're just nothing than an insect that should be squashed.
Wow.
The depravity of that is astounding. Astounding. Mm. Because for me, for some reason, like the pregnant woman stuff is.
Yes.
It's just a whole nother layer. And it's because like pregnancy is supposed to be sort of like the sacred time.
Well,
like,
and I kind of even remember too, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've ever not heard this, but one of the things, like if you feel like you're about to be like sexually assaulted is just, I'm pregnant.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
even if you're
you
not,
say that,
but like a way to like help
these
to hopefully get it to stop because, you know, like it's just a.
So I just had a really like hard time with that, like in general, you know. So these people would have like all these things done to like their limbs and just have to like live with it. Like they would have like their like people would just like tie big tourniquets or belts, like leather straps around a limb and just like let it just totally asphyxiate and infarct. And then like gangrene would form. And these people would just like die of, you know, infection if the doctors couldn't revive them. And the people that got their limbs frozen also would sometimes get doused with like boiling water or just like sprayed down by with the flamethrower to see if like we could, you know, reverse the damage from the frost. And researchers also fired at their test subjects with guns, like varying, you know, varying degrees of ammo, varying like calibers of weapons just to see like what caused what sort of damage. And it was said that some prisoners, also the ones that like underwent like the starvation and dehydration experimentation, the ones that would like eventually die from that, it would look like they were mummified by the end because they were just so severely dehydrated and malnourished that they were just husks of themselves. Another tidbit, they also performed transfusions with different blood types to observe the effects of receiving the wrong.
No way.
Yeah. So like they would purposefully like, oh, this guy's, you know, by that time we knew about like RH and like ABO typing and stuff. And they would just like purposefully just transfuse the wrong type of blood and just record what happened.
Wow.
5 subjects were forced to drink a solution of iperite and lewisite gas in water. And the following report sort of describes the conditions of every subject precise, like without mentioning what happened to them in the long run. And this is like one of the excerpts from the report. September 7th, 1940, 6 p.m. Subject is tired and exhausted, looks with hollow eyes, weeping redness of the skin and upper part of the body. Eyelids edematous, swollen, epiphoria, hyperemic conjunctivae. September 8th, 6 a.m. Neck, breast, upper abdomen, and scrotum weeping, reddened, swollen, covered with millet-sized to bean-sized blisters. Eyelids and conjunctivae, hyperemic and edematous, had difficulty opening eyes. September 8th, tired and exhausted, feeling sick, body temperature 37 degrees Celsius, mucus and bloody erosions across the shoulder girdle. Abundant mucus, nose secretions, abdominal pain, proteinuria, and it just goes on and on and on from there. Like, it's just exposing them to different shit and then just watching as they slowly deteriorate. So there's a lot more, but I think that's the bulk of the physical stuff that was happening to the prisoners. Several members of the Imperial Army, along with
let's take a deep breath after all that.
Let's take a moment. Let's palate cleanse.
Let's take a fridge cigarette.
Is anybody else calling their Diet Cokes fridge cigarettes these days? Because I heard that on TikTok, and now it was not my own term. I heard it on TikTok, and I thought it was hilarious, so now I'm adopting it. We're cleansing our palates with a fridge cigarette.
I took a puff.
Puff of my fridge cigarette. All right,
I'm ready. Continue. Here we go.
Several members of the Imperial Army, along with leading figures within the aristocracy and the closest advisors of the emperor, would either participate in various ways in these programs of biomedical experimentation. Either that, or if they didn't participate, they at least knew about it. Like, everybody knew about this. This was not a big secret. Like, no, they weren't advertising it, but they did very little to, like, hide.
But they just knew what that unit was doing.
Oh, yeah. And then Prince Chibu, who was Emperor Hirohito's younger brother, was actually an ardent disciple of the ultra-right wing, and he increasingly influenced Japanese military policy in the immediate pre-war era also. And he was attending lectures and attending vivisections. Like, these vivisections, they would do these, like, in front of an audience. It'd be like a big theater, like an operating room theater, where a bunch of people would, and he would attend lectures and all of these demonstrations, like, delivered by Ishii, and he was very much, like, involved with this, too. And during the unit's operation, directors of the labs at Unit 731 would visit some of the country's best medical schools, including Kyoto Imperial University and Tokyo Imperial University, where they showed films of their and photos of their experiments on humans and recruited promising young physicians from these schools. So what was, again, not a secret, like, they're sharing all of this with all the local schools, like, and recruiting people to come join them, all in the name of the Imperial Japanese Army. So they're not hiding it. Ishii was quoted to have said during his supervision of the unit, quote, "The research we are now about to embark on is the complete opposite of these principles and may cause us some anguish as doctors. We pursue this research for the double medical thrill as a scientist probing to discover the truth in natural science and as a military person to build a powerful military weapon against the enemy." So basically he's saying, yeah, it's kind of against everything we stand for.
We believe
for,
in as doctors, but...
But that's fine. As long as it's not. Serves Japan, like, whatever, man. In Unit 731, it's believed that between 10 and 12,000 men, women, and children and infants were killed in these research facilities. Once they obtained all of these pathogens that they had gotten, they started growing and manufacturing them, like replicating them, and they would breed these plague-infested fleas within their unit.
Great.
Like, they would breed them by the thousands so that they could just deploy them over Chinese cities.
Was this in his petri dishes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's beyond petri dishes now. He's got fucking vats.
Yeah.
Vats of the plague and vats of cholera and typhoid and all of that bullshit. Ishii determined that the fleas were actually a very efficient carrier of transmitting disease, mainly the plague, obviously. And they focused a lot of their energy once he made that discovery on breeding fleas. That was... I'm not laughing because it's funny.
I mean, they breed themselves enough, don't they? Like, you don't really have to do
it
much.
It seems ridiculous. What they were doing with it was horrible because it resulted in the deaths of thousands and thousands of people. But they started, like, they had these big incubators and started, like, incubating flea eggs to, like, breed the fleas. And they had 4,500 flea incubators operational all at once. And they were each capable of producing 45 kilograms of fleas. Do you know how big a flea is, you guys?
It's like this tiniest little speck.
How many hundreds of thousands of millions of fleas is 45 kilograms
Oh, man.
Of fleas?
Wow.
That is fucking substantial.
Yeah.
So they would drop these fucking kegs. I mean, these are millions, billions of fleas that are all infected with the plague.
Wow.
Over cities. So it's like, you can't escape from that. Everything is just fucking crawling with fleas. That, by the way, that's like my worst fear in life is insects biting me and crawling on me. So like, this is particular, like for me, I'm not sleeping at night thinking about this. Right?
Especially when they come out at night.
No, hello. Yeah, no, fuck that. Nope. I'm noping right the hell out of that situation. Noping.
Nope. See ya.
Yep. So just to like illustrate like the scale of what they were doing and like how, you know, they were just doing literally whatever they could to just like decimate the enemy. Like they're like, how can
anyway,
we further weaponize this?
We've gone through the medical. We've gone through like, you know,
freezing,
just like
boiling water.
How can we get
weapons?
These plagues to them? Now we know what they do to them. How can we get them to them?
Exactly.
Oh, let's do it by a flea.
Yep.
What?
So they had made sort of these like prototypes of like bacteria bombs, which were like these devices you could drop, which would in theory then like spray out bacteria or whatnot. Those were not as effective, they found, in terms of like number of casualties, as when they physically got in a plane and sprayed the bacteria over cities. So they started focusing on that because that gave them more casualties when they did that. Now
they're just looking at like,
oh yeah,
how can they do this more widespread?
Right. Like, how can we kill more people? How can I make this kill as with like maximum efficiency? So, and then like as an occupational hazard, a lot of employees and staff would end up dying.
Well, no
just,
shit.
Just because they got a flea bite and contracted the plague or, you know, got exposed to this, that, and the other thing, you know? So
oh,
a lot
you
of
got sprayed with the disease you were spraying? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like,
I know, fuck you. You can,
where's
you
OSHA?
Can die. Yeah, I know. Where is OSHA? So now it's like 1945 and something's got to give, right? Because we know this shit ends at some point. So in 1945, the Soviet invasion of Manchuria or the Manchurian occupation happened. Which began August 9th of 1945. So as the Soviets invaded Manchuria, which was like where their largest facility was of Unit 731, this occurred almost exactly 3 months after Germany surrendered on May 8th of 1945. And it was the largest campaign of the 1945 Soviet-Japanese War, which resumed hostilities between the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the Empire of Japan. They had had like 6 years of peace between them. So this like reignited all those flames. Now, Lieutenant Colonel Murray Sanders arrived in Yokohama in September of 1945. And Sanders was this really highly regarded microbiologist and a member of the U.S.'s Military Center for Biological Weapons. So Sanders' duty was to, once, you know, the U.S. started getting word that they were doing all that crap over there, his duty was to go over and investigate what was happening at these units. Like,
did he shut
first
them down?
Person. We'll get there.
He'll be my favorite. Can I call him Colonel Sanders?
I mean, there's no one person that shut shit down. There's not like one person.
I want it to
basically
be Colonel Sanders.
I know you do. Colonel Sanders makes good chicken.
I know.
Okay. So at the time of his arrival in Japan, he had no knowledge of what Unit 731 was. Until he finally like saw it for himself and learned about it. And then the U.S. getting in touch with Japanese officials started threatening to bring the Soviets into the picture and to let them know what was going on. And with that, the Japanese wanted to avoid prosecution under the Soviet legal system, because that's what would have happened if the Soviets came in and started prosecuting them for their war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So the morning after he made that, they made that threat, the Japanese decided surrender was the most appropriate next step. So once word got out that the Soviets were like essentially going to march on and invade Manchuria, the threat of prosecution was there. They were like, we got to get rid of all this fucking evidence. Like, we have all these big facilities, we have all these prisoners, and we are going to get our asses handed to us by the Soviets if they find out what we've been doing, because we've been breaking all those laws about war. Like warfare. So they abandoned their posts like almost immediately in order to conceal all that evidence. A whole bunch of shit was destroyed. A whole bunch of facilities were actually like bombed. Like they would truck in like these big loads of dynamite and just put them all over facilities and just blow them up. Sometimes with people inside, prisoners inside.
Oh my gosh.
Low-level employees were sometimes, if they were felt to be like a little bit risky or like they might crack, they got shot. They got executed.
What?
And the remaining prisoners, if they weren't like in a facility explosion, they were fed poison and killed quickly or ushered into the gas chamber just to make them go away as fast as possible.
Wow.
Former member of staff on Unit 731, Hideo Shimizu, actually went on to say after the fact that he was instructed to eliminate evidence by burning any remaining victims, collecting leftover bones from the area. Like, they were just fucking bones. Just piles of bones. He had to sweep those under the rug. And then using explosives to destroy any other remains that he couldn't get rid of. And while boarding the departing train to leave, he was given a cyanide compound and instructed to take the compound if he was captured so that he could kill himself instead of giving himself over to the Soviets.
Coward.
Mm-hmm. At this time, Ishii and some of the other very high ups actually went into hiding for a while. And there was one point where he tried to fake his death, which is...
So he said tried.
He tried.
So they found him.
Yeah, obviously they uncovered him and found him because he was just being stupid. Now,
do better.
Just do better. Now, in the U.S., you would think that once it was like uncovered what was happening...
We'd shut that shit down.
We would
down.
Just like condemn them, right?
Right.
Not quite.
Damn it.
The U.S. and all of its historical glory and all of its wonderful fucking decisions that it's made in the past wanted all of that very valuable and data. Just
sorry.
It's terrible.
We need all that data.
We
first.
Need the data.
We don't agree with what you did, but no. We want the data.
But if you learned anything,
we're not going to let it go to waste.
You can share it. General Douglas MacArthur was the supreme commander of the Allied powers and responsible for rebuilding Japan during the Allied occupations. And MacArthur struck a deal with Japanese informants to the positions of Unit 731, including all of their higher-ups and leaders, in exchange for providing exclusive American access to their research on the biological warfare. So basically, these guys were monitored. Like, they would have Americans, like, sort of watch them, but they never went to jail. They were monitored, but they never went to jail. They were never prosecuted, and they got completely pardoned because they started singing like a canary about all of the shit that they learned.
Don't you hate how that can happen?
It gets even worse.
You give us the info you want, and you can go scot-free, regardless of what you did.
I fucking hate that so
much. Serena Joy.
That's a thing. Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yes. Yep. And when Japanese scientists began disclosing all of the information on that they learned, despite the establishment of their own research program, American scientists faced a significant gap, or they felt they did, at least, in what they knew about biological warfare, because how are they going to research it? It's against the Geneva Convention. We can't fucking do that to people. But Japan did it, so we might as well reap the benefits from all of that.
They broke the law. We didn't.
Yeah, we didn't.
Just took the
we just
goods from it.
The goods.
My gosh.
So the potential value of all that data for America at the time was like invaluable. Like they were, you know, thinking that it was going to be all this immense grand stuff. So,
was it though?
I mean, they did actually learn a lot about disease and about weapons,
but like...
and about transmissibility and all shit that we can't even use in warfare anyway because of the agreements we have with all the other countries.
For a reason.
For a fucking reason. And when the war came to an end and Unit 731 was disbanded, Japanese scientists began obviously started talking about all of that stuff in the unit.
Look at the work
we did.
And
all of it came out.
Look at what we did.
Yep. So.
No.
Mm-hmm. Just as a side note, there were zero survivors of Unit 731.
Oh my gosh.
There is not one person, not one single prisoner that walked into that facility, that entered that facility,
well,
that
course,
did not die.
I mean, with the numerous things that you have said that they have done to them.
No one survived. Not one.
I can't see how they would. I would have loved to say that somebody would have, but
no.
Those are some of the most horrific things we've ever talked about in a few years
I'm
of
telling
doing
you.
This.
I'm telling you. This is so bad.
That is, there's,
like I said, in the first part, there was that big escape attempt, and there were a couple other escape attempts. Every single time, these people were tracked down and executed. Every single time.
And I'm sure if there had been a survivor, there'd be things that we don't even know.
Oh, yeah. We have no... I don't think we have any. At least as lay people, we don't know.
Right.
Maybe the U.S. knows on
CIA
some... You know what I mean? The CIA,
of, yep.
Yeah. Highly Well, because while German physicians were brought to trial and like all for their involvement in the Holocaust and like the Nuremberg trials happened and had all of their crimes publicized, the U.S. like worked to conceal all of this information about what Japan was doing. Like they did not share any of that. That was being completely overshadowed by what was happening in Germany. And like that was completely overshadowed, and the U.S. just swept it under the rug. They said, "Well, we benefited from it." Well, it kind of goes
along with why your husband, the history buff, is like, "I really have no idea."
I didn't either. No, right. We didn't know. Mm-hmm. And this is like really bad. Mm-hmm. This is so bad.
Yes.
So, I mean, because of the potential benefit of the data to us, the Imperial Japanese Army was essentially pardoned for all of their crimes committed during World War II. The Soviets never got a hold of the data. Never prosecuted them. Nobody got prosecuted for this because the U.S. benefited a little bit from the data.
Wow.
Or they thought they did anyway. Ishii was ultimately found and arrested by the U.S. authorities.
Because he didn't die.
Because he's a dumbass. And this was like at the end of World War II, like during the U.S. occupation of Japan, he was found. Him along with other leaders that were hiding around. And he was supposed to be thoroughly interrogated by Soviet authorities, but instead Ishii and his team managed to negotiate and receive immunity for Japanese war crimes. So therefore, basically he disclosed everything that he knew. He got all of his records, all of his files that he had available, and he shared it. And, they, you know, never prosecuted him.
Come on.
He literally...
Not
walked
one,
out of
not
this.
One person no. faced any kind of retribution.
Nope.
What?
I know. That's the part of this that I think is like some of the hardest to wrap my head around is that they did not pay for this.
No.
No. There was no justice. There was no justice at all.
Does it all just like fall under the
it all just,
casualty of war?
Pretty like, much. Just, pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
The United States like essentially backed up their like they essentially like the rationale was that the information obtained from the Unit 731 quote-unquote studies was quote absolutely invaluable, and it quote could never have been obtained in the U.S. because of the scruples attached to the experiments on humans.
Regardless, I don't care.
No. Yeah.
I don't even know what else to say.
I don't know either. It's so bad. Ishii's immunity deal was concluded in 1948, and he was never prosecuted for any war crimes against humanity.
And he just got to live out his days with his Petri dishes.
He sure did. His pet Petri dishes on leashes.
Fuck?
Yeah, I know.
This is ridiculous.
It really is
This is enraging.
So bad. I know!
This is enraging.
It's so bad. It's so bad. After being granted immunity, this gets worse.
No.
Wait a second. This is insane. This is insane.
What?
After being granted immunity, Ishii was hired by the U.S. government.
No! Come on! You're lying.
I'm not. I swear to God.
To do what now?
To lecture American officers at Fort Detrick on the uses of bioweapons and the findings made by Unit 731 during the Korean War. And Ishii reportedly traveled during the Korean War to Korea to take part in the U.S. Army's alleged biological warfare activities. And in February of 1952...
Sit down, please, and listen to me on how I mutilated these human beings.
Yes.
Women, children.
Yeah. Yep.
And what I learned from it.
Yeah, this is what I learned from all of these things.
And they probably like praised him like a god.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is disgusting.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He also is a man of tiny genitalia. Like, there's just no...
There's no way around that for him. He literally must be. So, if you Google a picture of him, too, he looks like a rat. Because he is a rat. He's like a human rat. He's awful.
He's a rat turd.
He's a huge turd. He's like a big rat turd.
This is disgusting.
He's the worst.
I can't even believe.
In February of 1952, Ishii was explicitly named in a statement made by North Korea claiming that he, along with other Japanese bacteriological war criminals, have been involved in, quote, systemically spreading large quantities of bacteria-carrying insects by aircraft in order to disseminate contagious diseases over our frontline positions and our rear.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know. So, I mean, they didn't like him in North Korea. They were like, fuck you. Maybe because he was in the East. He did this to North Koreans, too.
Right.
And to South Koreans. And he did this to everybody. Like, they were like, we don't fucking want you here.
And he was just taking who he could get, which was those people. So,
mm-hmm. After returning to Japan, Ishii opened a clinic.
No.
Opened a clinic.
Sign me up to be his patient, please.
Performing exams and giving treatments for free. Yep.
What?
Yeah.
Was there a line out the door? I can't, like, what?
He did keep a diary, but he did not make a reference to any of his wartime activities of Unit 731. In his last years, Ishii could not speak clearly, and he was uncomfortable. I hope he was very uncomfortable.
I hope he is haunted by every soul.
Mm-hmm. He ended up dying at age 67 in October 9th of 1959 from laryngeal cancer.
Good.
And... yeah. His funeral was actually chaired by Masaji Kitano, his second in command within Unit 731. Like, he worked with him in Unit 731. And the guy was like, I'm going to throw your funeral because
I
love you.
And I bet you, like, every leader and their mother, mm-hmm. like, attended this funeral. Yeah.
He died a free man, really having faced no consequences for his involvement in Unit 732.
This is insane.
The end.
There's... I can't even say it.
I know. I know. Yep. So, I hope y'all have just a lovely week. I hope you just have a lovely week. You know, I...
Have a great week, everyone.
I just... There's really nothing I can say to wrap this up other than I'm glad it's over because this really fucking pissed me off.
There are so many things about history that I can tie to present day right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we just don't learn any lessons.
No, none of us do. We just keep repeating the same shit over and over and over again.
Which we think is going to get different results.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the definition of insanity.
Sure is.
And... this world is insane.
Yep.
That guy is insane. The fact that he didn't face any repercussions and basically died a god is insane.
Yep.
And I can't even continue.
Nope.
And that's insane.
We are fucking hanging our hats right on that.
I need a hat.
Devin needs a hat to hang.
Thanks for listening, everyone. You can find us at medcrimes@facebook.com.
You can find us on YouTube, Medcrimes Podcast.
I said just said Facebook.com.
You sure did. I was just going to let it go. I was like, I don't know what she said.
Well, search for us on Instagram at Instagram.com. <I'm just> Who goes to Facebook.com anymore, by the way?
Everyone's got a device, Devin.
The Facebook.
The Facebook.
If you don't know where to find Facebook, you just type in Facebook.com and it will take you right there.
Anyway, if you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
If you want to send us an email, crazy stories, ideas, suggestions, anything you want to say, email us at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Do not be this guy.
No.
Be whatever you want to be in life, but not this.
If your name is Ishirishi.
That's not his name.
That might as well be. Then be better.
What just happened?
Be better.
Do better, everybody.